The deputy attorney general job, especially in the years immediately after 9/11, was incredibly stressful. The more stressful the job, the more intentional I've always been about helping my team members find joy in our work. Laughter is the outward manifestation of joy, so I believe if I'm doing it right and helping people connect to the meaning and joy in their work, there will be laughter in the workplace. Laughter is also a good indication that people aren't taking themselves too seriously. When I was Deputy Attorney General, as part of that search for joy and fun, I sometimes engaged in a bit of staff tourism. If I was going to a large White House meeting, for example, I would look to take a member of my staff who hadn't been there before. Usually this was a fun experience for them. Once, it almost went horribly wrong. One of President Bush's major initiatives involved finding ways, consistent with the law, for various departments and agencies to make grants to faith groups. Most agencies, such as the Department of Justice, had an office devoted to this faith-based initiative. In 2004, President Bush summoned the leaders of the departments to give him a report on their progress. I was attending for Justice. Shortly before the meeting, I learned that each principal meeting participant, which is what I was, could bring a plus one, meaning a staff member, to support me. I knew our faith-based work well, so I didn't need a plus one. But it occurred to me that Bob Trono, one of my most valuable staff members, had never been to a White House meeting. Bob had been a federal prosecutor with me in Richmond and handled the Leonidas Young case, including the prosecution of the young minister who lied for Mary Young. I asked him to come to Washington and help me oversee the United States Marshals Service and the Federal Bureau of Prisons. These were vital parts of the Department of Justice, but they rarely got White House attention. I thought it would be fun for him to get a chance to go. When I suggested the idea, however, Bob wasn't feeling it. He didn't know anything about the faith-based efforts, literally nothing, and didn't feel comfortable going to a briefing with the President of the United States on the subject. I replied that I would do all the talking and didn't need his help. After further protests and reassurances, he reluctantly agreed. "Don't worry," I said. "I got this. I'm not going to screw you." Two things, besides me, screwed Bob. First, before the faith-based meeting was to start, I was unexpectedly called to a meeting in the Situation Room at the White House that went longer than I expected. Second, President Bush, who was not with me in the Situation Room, continued his disturbing pattern of starting meetings early. This was not quite as disruptive as President Clinton's notorious tardiness, but having a president occasionally start early meant everyone had to show up well ahead. Soon after becoming Deputy Attorney General, I missed a morning terrorism briefing with the President because, arriving 15 minutes early, I decided to go to the bathroom just outside the Oval Office, known to my family as the highest potty in the land, and returned to find the Oval Office door already closed and the meeting underway. I had no idea what the protocol was for entering an Oval Office meeting in progress, and I was new, so I didn't test it. I left. A nervous Bob found a chair against the wall in the Roosevelt Room, far back from the action. He could see an empty spot at the table where my name was spelled out on both sides of a triangular tent card. And true to form, George W. Bush walked into the room ahead of schedule and with a look of impatience. Poor Bob. Bush could be impatient, and it drove me nuts that he started things early, but I was struck by his strong and occasionally devilish sense of humor. That year, 2004, he was in the thick of his re-election battle against Democrat John Kerry, who was hammering him for presiding over what Kerry called a jobless economic recovery. In one of our daily morning terrorism meetings with the president, FBI Director Bob Mueller told him that a suspected Al-Qaeda operative named Babar, whom we were closely monitoring, had just gotten a second job in New York. Mueller, not known as a comedian, then paused, turned his head toward me, and added, "And then Jim said..." Bush looked at me, and so did Vice President Cheney. I froze. Before our meeting, Mueller and I had discussed Babar's second job, and I'd made a private joke to the FBI director that I hadn't expected to repeat to the president, who could occasionally display a temper. Time slowed down, way down. I didn't reply. The president prompted me. "What'd you say, Jim?" I paused, and then, horrified, plunged in. "Who says you haven't created any jobs? This guy's got two." To my great relief, Bush laughed heartily. Cheney did not. On the way out of the Oval Office, I tugged Mueller's arm. "You're killing me," I said with a smile. "Don't ever do that to me again." "But it was funny," he replied, with the grimace that passed for his smile. Bob was not a jokester, and his severe demeanor intimidated most people. Word at the bureau was that he had knee surgery not long after 9/11 and declined anesthesia in favor of biting on a leather belt. But I had seen enough to know he had a dry and slightly dark sense of humor. I was seeing it now. "And it was also private, Bob. It was a joke between us." He got it, although he still thought it was funny. From this distance, I can see that he was right. I saw the devilish side of President Bush one cold winter morning, with the city covered by a freshly fallen snow. This frigid morning, Bush was seated in his normal armchair, with his back to the fireplace and close to the grandfather clock. The president was apparently about to head somewhere on Marine One, so as was the custom, reporters were bundled in their winter coats and huddled outside near the Rose Garden to record his departure. As I began briefing the president on a terrorism case, I could hear the sound of his approaching helicopter. The sound grew louder. Stone-faced, the president held up his hand. "Hold on a minute, Jim." He kept his hand aloft to pause me, turned slightly in his chair, and looked out onto the south lawn with